How are you doing this morning, James?
I'm fine, sir. Happy Friday to you.
Absolutely. Happy Friday to you. When you came up with the idea of doing gravy, what films inspired you? Were you looking for stuff like Devil's Rejects or Bloodsucking Freaks or anything in particular you wanted to bring out from that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought American Psycho and Funny Games, I guess dramaturgically, for lack of a better word, were probably the two biggest influences. And then sort of on a more visceral level, I love the early Raimi and Peter Jackson stuff. So, and I feel like both of those guys don't really do that anymore, so there's space for someone else to do it.
Did you plan on going full tilt horror, full tilt gore? Because, I mean, were you trying to distance yourself at all from, like, just because you spend so much time on television with standards and practices, was it relief to be able to do whatever you wanted to on the screen?
No, you nailed it, man. It was the best thing ever. We went full scale comedy and full scale gore. We didn't really want to hold back on anything. I mean, I believe the movie's being released unrated, which, I don't know, makes me proud.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question because I remember a couple of years ago when Hatchet, I think it was Hatchet 3, was the last one I remember getting an unrated release, and it was a big deal because they weren't able to keep it in theaters because of that. Has that changed in getting an unrated film out to theaters?
You know, I don't know exactly like the machinations of what makes it hard or what makes it less hard. I mean, I feel like if we had gotten a bigger release, I probably would have had to go back in and make a few adjustments. But since we're doing like the limited sort of couple city thing, it was sort of like there's no way in hell I'm going in and recutting this. No way. So I guess that's the upside of a small release is that you get to put out the movie that you want to put out.
Was there any pressure from anyone to sort of tone it down at all, either in content or gore?
Never, not once. I was working with a bunch of producers who were completely hands off, so I didn't have anything going on while I was making the movie. And then once we found Shout Factory, they got it. It was like the right people for this movie, and they didn't want me to change anything.
How many theaters is it going in?
I think just two. I think it's one in LA and one in New York.
Can you talk a little bit about the casting process? Because you do kind of have you have a big cast of either recognizable names or recognizable faces or both. Did you look for a specific place to draw from? Like Jimmy Simpson does a lot of stuff on TV, and then Gabby Sabede is obviously from movies. How did you go about casting the film?
Well, it starts with Jimmy and Mike, who are two of my best friends. So they were going to have to do it whether they wanted to or not. Luckily they wanted to. And then we sort of built around them. With sort of the most eclectic and what we hoped was, unexpected sort of ensemble of actors that we could find for a movie like this. I think part of the fun, part of the appeal, at least for me, was having people find this, whether they see it in a theater or discover it on demand or however they find it, see what the movie's about, and then see who's in it and go, wait a minute, what? Like, what are these people doing in this movie? How did that happen? That was a huge part of the fun for us, putting together like this crazy, fun, cool ensemble of character actors who have done TV, who have done film, who, I mean, Sutton Foster is the sweetheart of Broadway. Like, we really did kind of put together what I thought was a really cool, eclectic group of people to come into a restaurant and potentially get eaten.
Now, one thing I noticed, and I think it's interesting that you point out that Jimmy and Mike are your friends. They sort of channel you a little bit. A lot of us are familiar seeing you on Psych, and they seem to have channeled at least your rhythm and delivery. Was that deliberate, or were you at one point planning on playing one of the roles?
Way, way back, this was like an 8-year road to getting this movie made. And there was a very, very early incarnation pre-Psych where I was maybe going to play one or the other, but I hadn't even decided which one. I abandoned that pretty quickly in the process. I think talking about rhythm is fair because that's just the way that Todd and I write. And I think, you just plow through stuff, and if you miss a joke, you miss a joke, and rarely is there space allowed to sort of to sort of let comedy play in a traditional way. And I think that applied to Psych, and I think it certainly applies here. Plus, Mike and Jimmy and I have spent a lot of time together, and as you, I'm sure, know with any of your great friends, you end up sort of adopting each other's rhythms and colloquialisms, and you just have bits that are unique to your friendships. And when you put two-thirds of a trio together on screen, chances are stuff's going to end up sounding like the stuff that you do in life.
No spoilers, obviously. I've seen the film, obviously. So, but is there going to be a sequel? Because you do kind of set some stuff up.
Yeah, you always sort of dream that you know, if you do your job right and enough people care, that maybe you get to revisit a wonderful experience like we had on Gravy. So the door is left open for that purpose. You know, stranger movies that I never would have guessed would have had sequels have had sequels. So I'd say never say never, but maybe you could say Nev or Neve. I, for one, would love nothing more than to make another one of these stuff. Like, make no mistake, it was such great fun. I'd go back in a second.
What's your favorite slasher movie?
I guess, you know what? I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna go to bat for the original Friday the 13th. I feel like so many people, you know, give Carpenter credit for inventing the slasher, when in fact, you know, I think Hitchcock did a pretty good job of inventing the slasher. But I get it. The killer POV and the score and all the stuff that we all appreciate about Halloween, it's totally legit. But I sometimes feel like Friday gets dismissed as like a pure knockoff or like a piece of camp, and it certainly became that. But that first Friday the 13th, I mean, I think it holds up with, you give me any slasher, I think it's right there. You know, the way that the death scenes are choreographed, the sense of dread that goes into each one where you know somebody's going down, but you have to watch 5 minutes of them, you know, go to the bathroom or stare at themselves in the mirror or light a cigarette or whatever it is. I thought there was a lot of nuance in that. And then the reveal of who's doing the killing, you know, for 1980 was rock solid.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it obviously launched a franchise that spans decades and still hasn't gone away. So because it's Friday and because I would probably answer this question differently if you asked me again tomorrow, I'm going to give the Voorhees family some love.
You have a lot of, speaking of love for movies, you have a lot of cinema geek outs in this film. The Kevin Bacon degree, are you the one with the shortest of everybody involved? Or do you have the shortest connection to Kevin Bacon? Because are you two away?
I'm two away. I'm trying to think if anybody's actually worked with Kevin in that cast. There might be a couple of us that are two away. I don't think anyone's got the bullseye.
No.
I don't think anybody's got one.
Cast him in the next movie, and
yeah, then everybody's minds explode.
Yeah, exactly. So how was this different from directing a film, in your experience, directing the film versus directing TV? Because you've directed quite a bit of television, correct?
I did. I guess I'll start with what isn't different, which is, you know, directing television is a great training ground for directing an independent film because you're used to having to move at breakneck speed and work with a budget, which is something that a lot of filmmakers who make giant movies no longer know how to do. I remember Scorsese gave a great interview a few years back where someone asked him, like, would you ever consider going back and making a movie like, you know, Mean Streets? And he was like, are you kidding me? I don't know how to work with that budget anymore. I wouldn't even know how to begin. So I think if you're going to go make a movie for $1 million or less, starting with directing some television, it's a great idea. It's incredibly valuable. And then it's like, what curveball can possibly be thrown at you that you're not used to dealing with? As far as the difference, and especially with Gravy, there were just no constraints creatively. Like, as long as we could shoot it for the money that we had, I got to do it. I didn't have anyone standing over my shoulder. There were no standards and practices. There was no network. There was no studio. It was just a sick twisted, depraved mad scientist running his laboratory the way that he wanted to, which is why, you know, I have no fingers to point at anyone. For anybody who doesn't like this movie, they just didn't like the movie I made. That's it. Period.
What's next? Are you going to be doing some more television? I know you've got some smaller projects on the docket, but what's your next big thing you're working on?
It'll be to make another movie. There's two possibilities right now, and to be completely honest with you, I kind of feel like whichever one gets traction first will be the one that wins, because I kind of like them equally. But they're both very much in the genre sandbox, because that's kind of my lane, and I'm not ready to leave that lane yet. I feel like I have a lot more stories to tell. So regardless of which way it goes, there'll be some blood.
Quick food related question, since this involves eating. What's the difference between a flan or flan? It's flan or matzah flan?
Well, it's definitely flan. I have the white girl in my movie say flan on purpose. She says it wrong. Flan is a custard dessert, usually marinated in some kind of caramel sauce that sometimes has a little bit of brandy in it. It's eggy. It's very eggy. Matzo flan, I'm guessing, is some sort of creation that has to do with Jewish cuisine? Shit, man. Help me out here. Matzo ball soup is just soup with dough balls in it, right?
Yeah. Would it be like the crust or the pastry section of it?
This is a good question, and I feel like someone should do some research and add an editor's note to the bottom of this, so that the world can know the difference between flan and matzo flan.
Did you purposely want Michael Weston to look Barry Gibbish for the stinger, or was that just kind of how he shows up?
Very, did you say Yiddish?
Barry Gibb-ish.
Oh, Barry Gibbish.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you clarified, because I was about to say, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Would have taken a real interesting turn here, yeah.
I was like, what do you mean, like Fiddler on the Roof? Like, what are you talking about, dude? Barry Gibbish was an on-set improvisation that happened based on the fact that we made that observation. That was a happy accident.
Did you do a lot of improv on set? I mean, since you wrote it, I mean, did you let the actors kind of have fun with it a little bit?
Everybody knew that they had a long leash. Everybody was sort of encouraged to do whatever they wanted, because as a writer, I'm always looking for actors who, you know, take my material and make it better. I think one thing that we discovered is that the movie was a little overwritten, and that there just wasn't a lot of space in there to improvise. We jammed so many jokes into that script that to get them all out, it was, and rhythmically sort of not stop sort of the rhythm of the movie, there just wasn't a lot of extra space. But there's still some pretty good stuff, especially in the freezer, where I kind of just let those two guys go wild, and a whole bunch of that made the cut.
You hoping this will become a Halloween perennial, something that everyone tries to dig up and watch along with Halloween and, of course, Friday the 13th?
Absolutely, man. We made it as a Halloween movie, which, you know, is kind of a genre unto itself, for me anyway, because, you know, you want to have a good time on Halloween. And we kind of feel like this is a movie that, you know, you can go and kind of plug into whatever your plan for the evening is. It's only 90 minutes long, and you can watch this movie and go to a party. You can go to a party, you can watch this movie. It's like, it's just a fun sort of snack, for lack of a better word, that I hope can become part of sort of Halloween festivities for years and years to come. It's also a great midnight movie, you know, the same way that, you know, Rocky Horror is. I hope that that's kind of the space that the movie can fill over time.
Do you have anything to add about the movie that you want to get out there? Any burning notes that you need to throw out there to make sure people are aware of?
You know, just that it's okay to laugh, man. you know, a lot of jacked up stuff happens in this movie, and it's ugly and it's nasty, and the effects are, you know, are pretty top notch. But it doesn't mean that, you know, it's not a comedy at its core. It is. You know, the first scene I think is pretty funny, and it's sort of sets the tone. And yeah, it's okay to laugh. That should be the tagline. That should actually be on the poster.
And thanks for using Practical Blood.
Yeah, you're very welcome, man. You got it.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me about this, and best of luck with the movie.
Thank you, brother, and thanks for watching. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.